This is exciting. Welcome to the very first episode of Courtside, the official England netball podcast, with me, Lindsay Chapman. I'm a TV and radio presenter and an international netball commentator, and I also happen to be a huge England netball fan. It's brilliant to have you along, whether you're a seasoned player, you're new to netball, you want to know more about women's sport, or you're just after a really good listen, you have come to the right place. As we head into the biggest summer of netball, I'm going to take you right up to the Commonwealth Games, where the England netball team will step out to defend their historic gold medal following that dramatic win in Australia in 2018. Remember that? Just 4 years ago. We're going to get up close and personal with exclusive access to some of the biggest names in netball. Famous voices you may recognise from elsewhere, and of course, your questions and comments. You can always get in touch using the hashtag ENCourtside. Oh, and do give us a follow on your usual podcast provider so you don't miss a moment. We're starting the series here in Bristol. I've come to Nailsea Secondary School, where I'm meeting a former international player turned coach. She spent 16 years playing at elite level, representing England between 1991 and 2006. She started Super League coaching with Team Bath and then Celtic Dragons. A goal attack, wing attack, she represented England at the 2002 Commonwealth Games in Manchester, which I remember well because I went to see it when I was a nipper. And as a coach, she's looked after England under-17s, under-19s and under-21s. Then in 2019, following an incredible 20-year career at Team Bath as both player and coach, she announced she would be leaving. The next step? Well, she became England netball head coach. That's right, what a scoop. It's the one and only Jess Thirlby. Welcome to Courtside.
Welcome back, this is for me. Thank you for bringing me back to my my old school.
Why is this place particularly special to you?
I just think that, you know, you come to secondary school from the age of 11, and by that point I'd started netball in junior school, but this place really supported my journey through all sport, but in particular netball, and fond memories of the people more than anything. But to be able to come back and think how from the age of 14 onwards, you know, I was representing my country at age group and doing that with the full support of the school, it's I can picture the headmaster's office as we're stood here.
Why, are we there a lot?
Not for bad reasons, for some congratulations on selections. And it brings back a lot of very nostalgic and good memories.
Shall we go and see if we can find your old netball court?
Let's do it. It's most probably more modern than I look. I'm a lot older now.
Let's go and have a look round.
So the tennis court's up there that I can see the corner of, they're the original ones, aren't they? I definitely know that in that corner I practiced my discus and shot put. Yeah. I definitely know that for sure. And I came through the fence over there on the way back from cross country, which I hated. I hated cross country. And I must admit I did cheat once, just once.
How did you cheat? Did you cut the route short?
A little bit, yeah. And then kind of rubbed my face to make it look like I was really hot. And then just limped through the hole in the fence. I've never cheated since, because you only ever cheat yourself. And I know this now.
You heard it here first on the England Netball official podcast.
I did not enjoy cross country. It was not my thing at all.
Welcome to Courtside, Jess.
Thanks for having me. Show number one. I feel very privileged. Thank you.
Or it's a pilot and we don't quite know how it's going to go.
They'll only get better from here on in. Keep listening, people.
How does it feel to be back in an echoey school gym? We can see netball posts at either end. There are basketball hoops around the place as well. It's got quite an echo on it, this particular room. Does it bring up any emotions?
Yeah, it does actually. It's more the floor. Like the surface hasn't changed very much because we had this kind of like rubber kind of blue floor. I remember that quite vividly. And often when we came in for like extra netball practice, or I'd come in at lunchtime just to do some shooting, that echoey feeling is actually quite reassuring, because it kind of reminds me of back in the day, like the 13, 14 year old self that was starting out on my journey really in terms of wanting to play for England at age group level. So as I say, it's really lovely to be doing this somewhere that has and holds so many memories for me.
What age did you actually start playing netball then? How old were you?
It was at junior school or primary school, and I think it was, you have years 3, 4, 5 and 6, and I remember at that particular time only the year 5s and 6s were allowed to start playing school netball, and I was in year 4, and I'm not one for rules, if I'm honest. So I was a little bit aggrieved that I had to wait until upper school to have a go. And that's really where one of the most important early figures, a teacher called Miss Brackpool at the time. She was quite young and most probably new to teaching, and I adored her. I was a bit of a teacher's pet, I think. And she kind of led the netball. And I don't know how we arrived at being afforded the chance to go and have a go in the after-school club. But I remember scoring two goals, the only two goals of the netball practice. So 2-0 to our team. And I remember that she wanted to name me in the school team, but that meant knocking out somebody in the years above, which I don't think went down very well. And I do remember her name, so it was Amanda Royal, so I do apologise.
Those things stick with you,
I know,
Amanda
they
Royals.
Do stick with me, because I think, God, what would I have felt like if I was Amanda? Like, I wasn't thinking that at the time, and I was most probably still in a little bit of shock, but I just remember that practice session so clearly on, like, an old gravel playground, scoring two goals, like, everybody around me thinking it was, like, incredible that you could get it through the net. And I was thinking, well, that's the whole point of the game, isn't it?
And how did you balance being here at Nailsea Secondary School, doing, I imagine, your exams and balancing starting to play really high-level netball?
It was definitely challenging, but I think by that point, that teacher that I mentioned, along with my mum, started up a local netball club. So my mum was the co-founder of Nailsea Netball Club, just for a group of mums, which is brilliant because that really resonates now when you look at all the different activities with Back to Netball. And when I came to school here, I guess what's great about secondary is the number of other sports you get exposed to. So I definitely remember having a really balanced initial few years at this school. Did a lot of athletics, did some basketball, like rounders, hockey. I just enjoyed the whole sporting environment really, and having a go at everything. But netball was always my true passion. It didn't matter how successful I may have even been in some of those other sports. I kept coming back to netball. And around 12, 13, you started, if you were showing promise or potential at that time, believe it or not, you had to go through about 7 or 8 rounds of trials. You know, it started with your local area and your district, and then it would go to the county. And then from the county, I remember us, we went to Millfield. And I remember getting through to what was going to be my first England trial for the under 16 England squad that was going to be hosted up in Sheffield. And super excited, obviously over the moon. It had been a long process. And the night before, I just remember the phone ringing. Again, I can picture it in our old house, and the old-fashioned phones, you know, with the big curly wire. And I remember my mum sat there.
Now available in a museum.
I remember thinking, who is that? It must be someone important, because it felt very formal. And she got off the phone and she had to break the news to me that due to an admin error, they hadn't realised, but I was actually a year too young
again
to go forward for the trial. Yeah, so, you know, again, rules. Maybe this is why I don't like rules. Yeah, you know, these things happen for a reason, don't they? I am quite a reflective person. And although at the time things can feel quite traumatic, in particular when you're younger, I think that just really just made me as driven as I am today, because I just got my head down, enjoyed my sport. I remember taking athletics quite seriously, actually. So I know it was around 14 when I think I had some really great conversations with a really supportive group of PE staff here. And we kind of just needed to start navigating, you know, now might be the time when I'm going to have to specialise, because I'd done so many other things. So I kind of, from 14 onwards, netball just became my thing.
Well, that was my question, really. How did you know you were good enough to be really good, if that makes sense?
I didn't really. You kind of put your fate in the hands of others, don't you? I think although I'm quite opinionated now and quite chatty, and maybe I was back then, just not conscious of it, I think the processes that you go through, I've always trusted those. If experts tell me that by doing something, I give myself a better chance to be successful, I've always just thrown myself at everything. And I go back to the question you asked around balancing schoolwork, and it was really tricky because I was good at school and I really enjoyed the school environment academically as well, but things never came easy to me. I wasn't, you know, straight A's didn't come without a lot of hard work, and I used to really enjoy coursework. I hated exams. And in my coursework, you know, I'd get an A because I really enjoyed the process. The exams I found really tough. And so I think the balance of it was really difficult, apart from the fact that I only ever knew what I'd done. So for me, sport was always part of my journey. And so the discipline that I think I most probably was gaining of, you know, 6 out of 7 nights of the week travelling either to Gloucester or to Bristol in order to play for the teams that I was playing for at quite a young age. And to see people like my mum and family, for whom I know, you know, that happens the world over in terms of the support network that it takes, it really instilled like a, I don't know, just a bit of a duty, and I was driven and I enjoyed that process and I loved the challenge. And so I don't know if I did ever know. I think I just went with it until which point somebody tells me that I'm not.
And well, look, you clearly were, because you were the first athlete to be asked to join the full-time programme at Team Bath, which has gone on to produce, you know, more than 80 players who've achieved national honours. How has that route developed, do you think, in terms of the pathway through to the international game?
It's so different now, because I guess, you know, we're so fortunate to have the Vitality Netball Super League and the strength across the country now, both geographically, but also with regards to the amount of work that those clubs are putting in to maintain, develop and allow more youngsters to enter the sport at that level and have a real clarity as to where's the next place and rung on the ladder for me to be striving for. And I think most probably for me, it wasn't as easy as that. You know, you had to really seek out opportunities. As I say, I had some really prominent figures and important people in my life that were opening my eyes up to senior netball. And I remember playing it, the old intercounties. I mean, I loved intercounties. I don't know how many people listening will remember it, but it was such a brilliant experience. And I was a 13-year-old playing for Avon County for the under-21s and the senior team. I mean, it was Crawley in London, so it was an education in itself.
What do you mean?
They didn't really know what to do with a 13-year-old when they wanted to go out on the evening after netball. So I kind of just got tucked in the corner, you know, like, just stay over there and it'll be fine. And I remember the players that had left the year before really stitched us up with the worst tracksuits ever. I am talking like Harlequin style, like the top was half yellow, half black, and the bottoms were the opposite. Yeah, sorry, I'm getting distracted. But I think the pathways are so much stronger. And I think from a Roses Academy perspective, there's so much more activity and opportunity going on at a younger age. I think there's still work to do, because when I look across other sports, and now that I'm a parent, you know, I still see this kind of inequality around George, my son, has been able to access and play team sports from 4. Livy's really only been able to enter netball and engage in that over the last couple of years. And even now, the club that she's at don't play games because they're so reliant, and rightly so, on their volunteers. That scares me, that it's still difficult. And I appreciate other areas in the country have different setups, but I think that in itself is like a big area where I think there's an opportunity. We need to kind of get some parity for girls and boys and across the country in terms of the entry point into our sport, because I think it's really tricky. And we know with school sport that that's been challenged over the last few years as well.
Let's talk about Team Bath. You won 5 national titles with Team Bath. Which one was the best?
Is this whole podcast about making me feel old?
Inadvertently.
No. Pre-Super League, there was obviously Super Cup, which was, in theory, the pilot to see whether or not it had legs, really, and look how strong it is now. But, yeah, winning the first Super Cup when we were kind of this group of misfits, youngsters, pretty good at netball.
What other names were with you then?
Well, Pamela Cookie, Billy Bowers, or Ursula Pritchard, as she's known now, who was the former Welsh captain and our Team Bath captain, Anna Stembridge. And then not really long after that, Sarah Frances Bayman, Tamsin Greenway, Rachel Dunn.
Some huge, huge netball names
and it
there.
I mean, it was a lovely group to kind of collide, basically. I don't know how it happened, but it did. So that first Super Cup was really special, because I think for the years previous, we finished bottom, then we finished second from bottom, bottom again. Then when we finished third in Super Cup, we celebrated like we'd won it, because it felt like such a big achievement for the brand of netball that we were trying to play and what we were trying to represent, I think, in terms of just being quite pioneering with having the first full-time programme. I mean, we literally did train every day to play the sport that we love. And I was at university at the time, so I was firstly travelling backwards and forwards in between my radiography degree, but then I took a year out between year 1 and 2 because I knew that this was a really special time. But then I think as a coach, I think the one I'm most probably a little bit more conscious of in terms of the feelings that I got is most probably the last one in 2013. Pam Cookie had returned back to our club, having gone over to Surrey Storm. And I remember that phone call when Pam called me up and said, I'm thinking I'd like to come back. And I was like, well, I'll just think about it. Obviously, it didn't take very long. It was great to welcome Pam back. And we had the likes of Cadine. But we had kind of real Team Bath stalwarts at the time, like Asha Tett, who is now Asha Francis, Mia Ritchie. And then Serena was then playing, and she was, I just remember we were playing Celtic Dragons. So it stands out because it's Celtic Dragons' only ever Super League final. And I just remember it was tight the whole game. And the last few minutes, it did get tighter, and it was like it was a race against the clock as to whether or not we could hold on to what was a really slim lead. And we got there, and I just felt this overwhelming sense of relief, which is always, I think, it's a topic in itself, isn't it? Like the feelings that you get when you reach success that you've longed for. And I just remember kind of being stood up and hunched over a chair on the bench, and Serena just came up to me and she kind of pushed my shoulders back and she had her hands on both my shoulders. She was like, Jess, it's okay, we've won.
You've done it.
And I just, in that moment, the coach in me was like, oh my god, I'm showing like vulnerability, like Serena thinks there's something wrong with me, like I'm not happy. And then, but because I'd worked with her for so long, it was also a really humbling moment to kind of almost have that role reversal where a player that you have worked with kind of knew how much it meant and kind of caught me in that moment of relief and tried to enable me to kind of feel the joy. So yeah, I think that one stands out because I think when you start to get success, it can be easily assumed that you're going to keep it. And I think often it goes dismissed or unnoticed. It doesn't get recognised or acknowledged how hard it is that once you start winning, to be able to repeat that for the number of years that Team Bath did. And not every year did we win, but we were always there or thereabouts. And I don't think in sport there are many teams that can honestly say that they do that consistently. And I'm really proud to have kind of stepped into that head coach role as a really inexperienced coach, but with just a huge desire and care for the people and the place, and try to do what the team had done more often. And yeah, it's a really special time, and I'm as proud now watching on. And I always think if I was to leave Team Bath and things were not to continue to be successful and competitive, I would feel like I'd failed, because it's had such a big part of me, but always because I cared for the progression of those players and the contribution that that environment made to the Roses and the England team. Without that, it also means nothing, because I care for the sport ultimately, and it just happens that that environment helped me become the coach that I am now.
And what a legacy that continues to have at Team Bath, because even if they aren't winning every game, we still expect them to, and they've got that target on their back always, because it's Team Bath, you know. And you did leave after a 20-year career, which surprised a lot of people, and then moved on to the big England netball head coach role. Wow. Was that an easy step to take? Had you got your eyes on the England job?
No, I definitely hadn't. So yeah, I did spend 20 years at Bath, kind of roughly split between playing and coaching. And when I started my coaching journey, I did a lot of other coaching as well. So Bath was kind of my full-time environment, but through the UK sport program I did lots of things. So I did a master's in coaching science, haven't quite finished that because I then had my family, but we won't go there. I've got to diploma level and I've promised myself I will complete it.
So where did the England opportunity come from? Because suddenly you're
completely out of the blue. So yeah, going back to your point around did I have my eyes on it, I learned quite quickly in the early years of my coaching that I felt this like weight of expectation that I should be saying that I want to be the England coach. And then I kind of bucked the trend on that when I kind of sat back and did some work with mentors at the time and thought, do you know what, it's not really, that isn't really sticking with me. I don't know if that is the driver. And just did some kind of unearthing really as to what was it that I enjoyed about what I was doing. Why was I prepared at 26 to stop my playing career in order to coach? That was quite unheard of at the time. So many have like followed since, which is great. And for me, it was all around the connection with people and with purpose and the environment and culture. And I know it's a, you know, a cliched word overused, but the way an environment operates and the connection that you have with people and kind of the drive to all be on the same page, to want to achieve something that maybe people have said is impossible. Everything's impossible until it's achieved. And so I kind of really enjoy that challenge. And so I stopped answering in that way for quite a few years. I was like, if I just aim for an England coach, what, that's more about me and a title as opposed to actually understanding what's meaningful around the journey that I'm on. So trying to stay a little bit more in the present, which can be hard because we're measured by our title or judged by our title, and we're measured and judged by the scoreboard, and that's sport, right? So I think you can kind of get swept up in that in the early days when you're not that experienced and you're not maybe in tune with why you do what you do. I had a really impactful opportunity through Brian Ashton, who was my mentor at the time, and he's really good friends with Kevin Roberts, who is formerly from Saatchi & Saatchi, very known across the world for his work both in business but also with the All Blacks. And he owns a property, one of many, up in the Lake Districts. And Brian said to me, you know, he wants to bring six people together and I want you to come. And we went to his house and he's very charismatic. He's very opinionated. And he had two of us from sport, two from education and two from business. And he basically just kind of prodded and nudged and talked to us about leadership. And he just got underneath everything. And unbeknownst to me at the time, in what was going on with me and kind of trying to navigate through these feelings I was having career-wise, that day, I think, was the bit that gave me more clarity and gave me the courage to make change. And so my time at Bath finished, and then it was the World Cup.
Yeah.
So I was able to...
Through World Cup at that stage.
And I remember actually doing the school run, and I saw on Twitter Tracy's announcement that she'd be stepping down. Yeah, that's the first time I knew of it, heard of it. And I was as shocked and surprised as anybody. And at this point, I'm a little bit of a lady of leisure, although that time was quite short. most probably my husband was quite pleased because we'd had to put some pennies away to cope with this like random event in our lives where his wife is just kind of having some random sabbatical, always with the intention to want to coach. But I just wanted to take some time to understand where that next place would be.
But then do you get a call or do you go back to the paper and you're like, oh, look, the England football head coach role is just in there. Yeah, how did they ring you? Like, how does it work?
It was a really interesting time. So when I saw that, despite what people might think, I did not make a natural affinity with should apply.
Yeah.
I just wasn't maybe in the right headspace for that. I got a few messages. So I got a few messages from either friends or colleagues. And it's like, oh, are you going to go for it? And I was thinking, oh my God, how are people putting two and two together and getting like five? What do you mean, am I going for it? Like, my head was in a bit of a spin. And then Sarah Symington, who was the performance director at the time, like, she did actually call me. And I think that was more of just a scoping out of, you know, are people interested in multiple roles within England netball, not specifically or explicitly talking about that role in particular. So certainly wasn't asked to put my name forward in that way. And then just kind of sat with it for a few weeks, really. Had a conversation with Rob, and it literally was end to end at the dining table, like, should I go for this job? And then we just kind of like spent a few weeks. I'd say weeks. It was most probably days.
It must have been days.
And spoke to my mentors, and it was a bit like, why wouldn't you? And everything you've done up until this point has prepared you as good as anybody to take this job on. And actually, when somebody just cuts through it like that, what's the purpose in what you've done? If you don't feel ready now, what else are you waiting for? And actually, all those years before where I stopped making that or being told that that should be what I focus on, maybe by taking my attention away from it, kind of naturally just afforded me the chance to at least put my name in the hat.
Well, look, I've brought you back to your old school. I'm now going to take you back to just before you went into that interview. You know, you must have had absolutely everything going through your head. What are they going to ask me? I've got all my stats. I've got everything. What do you remember from that interview? Now, what was the strangest thing you got asked?
This is going to sound awful. I don't remember particular questions.
Amazing.
Because the whole thing was taken over by, I know I was sat in the car park a good hour early with papers just strewn around me that I don't know why I kept that. Like, it's like me with revision, talking about school environment. My revision notes looked great and I had loads of them. Whether or not I actually aced it in the exam was a whole other
you
thing.
Said so any of
that's not a great start, is it? So I remember sat in the car park at Loughborough, just kind of going back over my notes and trying to stay calm. And
you love a notepad. We see you at the Super League with a notepad. We're all like, what's in it?
It's all just to mask something else that's going on.
You're
I think.
Doodling, aren't you?
Yeah, I do doodle a lot. When I walked in the room, I mean, this would not pass COVID restrictions right now. It was tiny and there were a lot of them, and I remember having to breathe in and squeeze past the panel to get to my chair, and I just remember plonking in it and then just like throwing my flip chart papers on the desk. And I just thought, wow, this is intense, you know, like most probably closer than you are to me now. And there were maybe five or six of them.
Wow.
I just remember trying to remember to be confident in the experiences that I'd gained and hopefully my passion for how much I cared for England netball and wanted them to continue to be successful off the back of Commonwealth Games. And I felt ready, and I said to them, I'm ready for that challenge. And then, yeah, you just have to leave it up to them. Somebody else ultimately decides if you're the right person.
I think your passion is very, very clear. And it's, you know, you sort of talk about your ethos, and it's so interesting hearing where you've come from, because I can see that in your coaching and the way that you work with the team. Very kindly, you mentioned the Commonwealth Games there. Let's motor towards that, because your first competitive action as head coach was a three-match test series And that was a win, wasn't it, over South Africa. Brilliant. And then you coached the team to a historic series win over New Zealand in 2021. And I was like, yeah, we've got that over New Zealand now. But next year is just huge for netball. And this summer, let's talk about that first of all. We've got the Commonwealth Games at the end of July, and then it's Netball World Cup next year. In just a couple of words, how are your nerves at the moment?
I'm containing them.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a. Because
you look chilled.
I look chilled? Yeah. That's what. Well, I'm getting up at 5 at the moment and starting kind of my days at 5 o'clock.
Wow.
And that's not because I'm expecting any applause for that, or isn't she a martyr? That's not where I'm coming from. But it's one of a couple of things that I've kind of adopted over the last few weeks and months to kind of. It's just a way of me managing myself. And we've paid quite a lot of attention in camp, actually, both for the staff and the players, around the wellness piece and not underestimating how important that is. And I think we've learned that a lot because of a lot of the journey that we've gone on through COVID, you know, which has been well documented with what the players and staff have been prepared to put themselves through to help best prepare the team for the upcoming challenge for both Birmingham and Cape Town. And I'm just trying to make sure that I'm readying myself. And part of doing that is to kind of maybe try out a few different things. So I love the peace at 5 o'clock. I love the sun rising. I love hearing nature. And I just like the fact there's no chaos. And so I'm quite a creative thinker. And there are big elements of my role that should really lean into that, you know, like when I'm thinking around session delivery and program design and how the camps leading up to Birmingham and match number one need to look and feel for the players, that requires a slightly different headspace. So yeah, I'm just, maybe if I'm chilled, it's just maybe a bit of an output of me trying a few different things and keeping myself calm. But if I'm really honest, like, I go to bed at night and I've got thoughts of it. I can wake up thinking about it.
I bet you wake up exhausted, having played at least 3 netball matches and coached through netball matches through the night. It's so impressive. You must have so much in your head. You've made big decisions already. You've just announced the Vitality Roses programme and the Roses Futures as well. So there are names that we know really well in there. There's some new names coming as well. Jess, we've talked before. You know this question is coming. What about selection for the Commonwealth Games? You know, what I want to know is, how do you make those decisions? Because I do look at the notepad. I know you've got loads of stats. Is it an emotional thing? Is it sort of a gut thing that you go with?
I think it's important that you trust your instincts and your gut, but you do that alongside the supporting evidence as well. I often think the answers come to you if you've taken all that into account. So from an objective process point of view, I can't say enough positives and compliments towards the selectors that assess every match minute played by every athlete week on week, both here overseas. That in itself just turns out a huge amount of information for us to scrutinise.
It's really detailed. It comes down to every pass, it comes down to every turnover.
And it's against certain criteria that relates to their position, you know, so you would hope that process is giving you some parity across those comparisons between how players are playing. Most importantly, I think at the end of all of that, is looking at them as individuals is only one thing, and it really doesn't speak to where I think the greatest strength of this team lies, which is in the team and the connections between them. So it's so important that you might have, and as a fan, you know, it's a fan's prerogative to look at an individual and, you know, get on my case and say that they're playing really well. And I welcome that. And actually, I love it because it tells me that the fans are engaged on the journey. If they weren't doing that, would it not be a worry? So I'm fine with opinion.
Good, because we're doing it every single week. You are getting opinions left, right and centre, you know, and that changes for us through the Super League. And then we're watching the Aussie players as well. And we're going, oh, well, there's this here and there's this here. And I think it's like one of those warm ups and you're sort of pushing players around the court. You know, is it like that? How do you bring in those players that are in the ANZ and are in the SSN?
Yeah, so I think that, as I say, knowing kind of either proven connections between combinations, people's positions and what that enables us to throw out, we really back ourselves with and embrace actually our tactical diversity. So I have to stay true to that in terms of the selections that I make. So what I mean by that is that we've got an answer for every opposition team style, and we've got multiple styles. England teams have always had that. Even when I was in there, we've always been diverse, but we just haven't quite known how to harness it and what to do with it. And I think we've got better over the last few years at, one, articulating what we actually mean by that, and picking a team which stands up to say that we can do that. And I think you've seen that in the wins, as you say, against New Zealand, and in the quad series, pushing ourselves into that final. The people we can run off the bench are no longer coming on because somebody's not playing well. They're coming on as a positive change tactically and with a different style. And I think that's that has to be our greatest strength over all of our opposition teams, who are a little bit more homogenous in how they play. So in going back to your question as to how do I keep the team connected, my first meeting when I got the job on Zoom with the whole team posed that question to them. Like, we have to get better in the time that we're apart, because we're always going to spend more time apart than we will together. And often when some of the players return from overseas, we're in the heat of competition. So our time, it's a very different conditions surrounding us. So how do we improve ourselves as a collective when we're apart, and what is your contribution and commitment to that, and what is mine? And I think we've always revisited that question, and this group have been excellent in terms of, we have a lot of informal check-ins. You know, I was on a call with Jeeva the other day, just checking in off the back of her weekends. We have some more formalised ones. We'll have a group call. They've got their own team meetings as a player group. The leadership group is something that I've paid real attention to over the last few years. And the steps, they may be small and incremental, but it's to give this group autonomy and a sense of responsibility to each other and on behalf of the team. Because the risk is that when you've got a team that aren't always together, is I can link in with you all individually and independently, but that doesn't necessarily
create a team
for a winning side in major tournaments. So, and I don't know if we've got that right yet. I won't know, but I know that we've given it a lot of attention. And when we had a day together last week, obviously not everybody, the girls were overseas, the feeling in the room from the get-go is just one of complete connection and family. And that was with some of those new players, you know, like Ellie Ratu, who's only just been named. She's walking in a room now with Layla Gusker,
the big
and
names.
Laura Malcolm and Natalie Metcalf. And it's those moments that most probably stay with me more than any result, actually. And you might want to challenge me if, you know, things go to plan in the summer. But I've learnt that anyway in my other roles, is it's not often that the win or the lifting of the trophy that stays with me the longest, actually, and means the most. It is enabling people to, one, be the best version of themselves, get as close to their potential, but enjoy that journey with the people around them.
Obviously, the outpouring of love for Serena Guthrie was unbelievable, wasn't it, when she made her announcement? And that must have been tough. She must have had so much going through her head. I know you were super supportive of that, which is great. But with your head coach hat on rather than your personal hat on, what did that decision from Serena mean for you? Because she's such a huge part of the team.
Yeah, I think you're right to kind of try to divorce the two. And I guess that's always tricky for me, in particular with how long our relationship has stood for, really. So it's hard to separate the two. But I'd be lying if for a moment you're not, you know, your mind doesn't go straight to, okay, what's the impact of that? I'm very solution focused, though, so I don't stay in that space for too long. I think it's a momentary, okay, let that land. What's the impact of it? And therefore, what do I need to do? And how do I support the team moving forward? Because I think anything other than that is most probably being a little bit disrespectful to the strength we've uncovered in this group over the last few years. And I just feel like Serena is almost like, she's one person that couldn't and shouldn't be replaced by one other person. She'll be replaced by the strength of the team that she's led in recent months. And these guys will step up and step in, and they have done already. And I think that's a measure of actually the reaction and response is just that, because it's, we can't say that we're a team and then worry that in missing one player that we start making excuses. We're not about that.
And I hear you, but who's going to play centre?
Oh, we've got a number of people that can play centre. I mean, the world most capped player in the world plays centre. That's not a bad person to have in your team.
Hello, Jade Clark.
But yeah, obviously we've had Laura Malcolm's been playing in the middle, even more so during domestic season. So that's been great. So I think we've got a number of players. Imogen Allison's been playing and getting exposure there. I think the future is bright around that centre position. And it's like any time, isn't it? You say goodbye to one and then others now have the opportunity to step up and flourish. And I think we're better a stage than in a home Commonwealth Games for people to do that, but still with a huge amount of experience in that midcourt.
Well, look, we are going to be on that journey with you big time. It's a big year. You know, the first ever gold medal in netball came in 2018. You are building towards the next one, backing it up. We always say it's so tough. It's a big job. Cannot wait to see what team you put out there. I've got to push, you know, yes, no. Are you going to give me any names?
No.
There we are. And I guess my last question on that, because we've only got the sports hall for half an hour and we've got a little challenge for you to finish off with, is what can we expect from Team England in the summer?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a really exciting, dynamic group with huge passion and desire to get out there with smiles on their faces, irrelevant of the game on game. We met last week and they said that they really want to immerse themselves in the experience. Those that went to the World Cup in 2019 really sharing how special it was, and actually to not let that bypass them. So we're going to really embrace it. We're hopefully going to connect with our fans as much as we can and actually just enjoy the journey, because if you want to be at the top table with these teams, winning by one and losing by one is part of that. So we'll give it our best shot, and we'll leave no stone unturned.
And I think the glorious thing is that it's a home Commonwealth Games, and you know what that feels like because you did it in Manchester in 2002, didn't you?
Yeah, there's nothing better than, I just remember the opening ceremony, and to be the last team to walk out, I think it was David Beckham, so that helped as well.
Nice.
He was kind of the torchbearer at the time. And I was a really young and most probably the newest member to that team, and had replaced Pam Cookie, sadly, because she did her ACL just prior to the tournament. So it was obviously a mixed journey to get to that point for me. But once there, I just felt so humble and privileged to be part of it and understand the role that I needed to play for the team. But to have another opportunity is just fantastic. Ironically, more so is the fact that when I was in the England under-16s, Birmingham has a special place for me. We're going in full circle here. We were selling the programmes as the England under-16s for the 1995 World Cup in Birmingham.
Wow.
So, and that was when Irene van Dijk was still playing for South Africa.
Gosh.
And that's when New Zealand, I think, didn't even make the final. It was a really controversial, memorable World Cup. So when I've driven to Birmingham over the last year for meetings as we build up to Commonwealth Games, and I said this to the players last week, how would I have ever guessed that I would be circling back to the place? I remember going into the players' tower because it was a university block. Every floor was owned by a team, and we were fortunate enough to visit New Zealand's floor. Well, there wasn't one space on the wall that wasn't covered in fan mail. Like,
wow.
It was just, again, it stayed with me. And to have the honour of leading this team into a home Commonwealth Games in a city where I've got that memory from my early playing days for my country just feels so surreal. So,
from programme seller to head coach of England netball. I mean, that's the scoop, isn't it?
I appreciate my under-16 England day, so I'm not devaluing that. And somebody needed to sell them,
of course,
right?
They did.
So I think I snuck in a few autographs and maybe took one home for myself.
Did you write your own? Just in case I'm, the England head coach.
Definitely.
Amazing memories. Brilliant stuff. Well, I can't wait to see you in Birmingham. But before that, it's challenge time, Jess Thilby. Here we go.
Here I go, not from one.
Jess Thilby, here we go. It's the challenge. It's 3 seconds or less. You have to answer in 3 seconds or less while shooting into that post there. So, question number one, what is your signature dish?
Thai curry.
Thai curry. What's your worst habit? 3 seconds or less.
Talking too much.
What is the worst netball rule?
Any of them. I don't like rules.
No, you seem to be a rule breaker, actually. What's the best netball position?
Goal attack.
What is the hardest netball decision you've had to make?
Naming this Commonwealth Games team.
What is your biggest regret?
Oh, biggest regret. I wanted to be a vet, so I regret not being intelligent enough for that.
This is amazing. The next question is, if I wasn't a netballer, I'd have been a...
vet.
There you go. Apart from netball, what makes you tick?
What makes me tick? My family and my dog.
She's getting every single one of these in, though. Final question to you on the 3 seconds or less challenge. It's the big one. Is it scone or scone?
Scone. If you ask me what my husband's worst habit was, I got a long list.
Thank you so much for talking to me, Jess. It's always a pleasure, and best of luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and good luck with the remaining podcasts.
Thank you very much. And And so the first centre pass has been taken. It went to Jess Thielby, but there's so much more of this match to come. Who'll receive the ball next and where will it take us courtside? Keep an eye on at England Netball socials for the latest news and do get in touch with your thoughts and your questions. I'm Lindsay Chapman, presenter on Instagram, and Lindsay_Chapman on Twitter. Give us a follow where you get your pods. Tell your friends about us. Tell your mum, your dad, your netball team, your neighbours, your gran. She was a baller when she was young, right? Also, if you have an amazing netball story, we'd really love to hear about it. Again, use the hashtag ENCourtside. The next pod drops in 2 weeks. I'll see you courtside. And just before I let you go, don't forget this Sunday, the Vitality Netball Super League concludes with the grand final, where the top four teams, so Manchester Thunder, Loughborough Lightning, London Pulse and Team Bath, will battle it out at the Copperbox Arena in London. Get your tickets now or watch the action live on Sky Sports. See ya.